Chapter 14. Meetings. The effects of the ring Tarangrial did not startle Nynaeve anymore. She was in the place she had been thinking of when sleep closed in, the great chamber in Tyr called the Heart of the Stone, within the massive fortress called the Stone of Tyr. The gilded stand lamps were unlit, but pale light seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere, to simply be, all around her, fading into dim shadows in the distance. At least it was not hot. It never seemed hot or cold in Telairunriod. Huge redstone columns ran off in every direction, the vaulted dome far above lost in dim shadows, along with more golden lamps hanging on golden chains. The pale floorstones beneath her feet were worn. The High Lords of Tyr had come to this chamber, in the waking world, of course, only when their law and custom demanded. But they had come ever since the breaking of the world. Centered beneath the dome was Kalendor, apparently a glittering sword made of crystal, driven half its length into the stone of the floor, just as Rand had left it. She did not go near Kalendor. Rand claimed to have woven traps around it with Sidene, traps that no woman could see. She expected they would be nasty. The best of men could be vicious when they tried to be devious, nasty, and just as primed for a woman as for the men who might use that Saangrial. He had meant to guard it against those in the tower as much as the Forsaken. Aside from Rand himself, the one who touched Kalendor might die, or worse. That was a fact of Telairunriod. What was in the waking world was here too, although the reverse was not always so. The world of dreams, the unseen world, reflected the waking world, if sometimes in odd ways, and perhaps other worlds as well. Verin Sedai had told Egwene that there was a pattern woven of worlds, of the reality here and others, just as the weaving of people's lives made up the pattern of the ages. Telairunriod touched them all, yet few could enter except accidentally, for unknowing moments during their own mundane dreams. Dangerous moments for those dreamers, though they never knew it unless they were very unlucky. Another fact of Telairunriod was that what happened to the dreamer here happened in the waking world, too. To die in the world of dreams was to die in fact. She had the sensation of being watched from the dimnesses between the columns, but it did not trouble her. It was not Mogadine. Imaginary eyes. There are no watchers. I told Elaine to ignore them, and here I— Mukadine would certainly do more than look. Even so, she wished she were angry enough to channel. Not that she was frightened, of course. Only not angry. Not frightened at all. The twisted stone ring felt light, as if it were trying to drift up out of her shift, reminding her that she was wearing only that. As soon as she thought of clothing herself, she was in a dress. It was a trick of Telairunriod that she liked. In some ways, channeling was unnecessary, for here she could do things that she doubted any Aes Sedai had ever done with the power. It was not the dress she had expected, though, not good stout Two Rivers wool. The high neck trimmed in Gyra Cruz lace came right up under her chin, but pale yellow silk draped her in folds that clung revealingly. How many times had she called Tara Bonner gowns like this indecent, when she had worn them to blend into Tanchico? It seemed that she had grown more used to them than she knew. Giving her braid a sharp pull for the waywardness of her own mind, she left the dress as it was. The gown might not be as she wanted, but she was no flighty girl to go leaping and squealing over it. A dress is a dress. She would wear it when Egwene arrived, with whichever of the wise ones accompanied her this time, and if any of them said a word— I did not come early to blather at myself about dresses. Birgitta? Silence answered her, and she raised her voice, though it should not have been necessary. In this place, this particular woman could hear her own name spoken on the other side of the world. Birgitta? A woman stepped out from among the columns, blue eyes calm and proudly confident, her golden hair in a long braid more intricate than Nynaeve's own. Her short white coat and voluminous yellow silk trousers, gathered at the ankles above short boots with raised heels, were garments of more than 2,000 years ago that she had taken a liking to. The arrows in the quiver at her side appeared to be silver, and so did the bow she carried.
"Is Gaedal about?" Nynaeve asked. He was usually close by Brigitta, and he made Nynaeve nervous, refusing to acknowledge her existence, scowling when Brigitta spoke to her. It had been something of a shock at first to find Gaedal Kane and Brigitta, long-dead heroes linked in so many stories and legends, in Tel Iron Riod. But, as Brigitta herself had said, where better for heroes bound to the wheel of time to await rebirth than in a dream? A dream that had existed as long as the wheel. It was they, Brigitta and Gaedal Kane and Rogosh Eagle-Eye and Arthur Hawkwing and all the others, that the Horn of Valir would summon back to fight at Tarmon Gaiden. Brigitta's braid swung as she shook her head.
"I've not seen him for some time. I think the wheel has spun him out again. It always happens so."
Expectation and concern both touched her voice. If Brigitta was right, then somewhere in the world a boy child had been born, a mewling babe with no knowledge of who he was, yet destined for adventures that would make new legends. The wheel wove the heroes into the pattern as they were needed, to shape the pattern, and when they died, they returned here to wait again. That was what it meant to be bound to the wheel. New heroes could find themselves bound so as well, men and women whose bravery and accomplishments raised them far above the ordinary, but once bound, it was forever.
"How long do you have?" Nynaeve asked. "Years yet, surely."
Brigitta was always tied to Gaedal, had been tied in story after story, in age after age of adventure and a romance that even the wheel of time did not break. She was always born after Gaedal, a year, or five, or ten, but after.
"I do not know, Nynaeve. Time here is not like time in the waking world. I met you here last 10 days gone, as it seems to me, and Elaine only a day before. What was it for you?"
4 days and 3, Nynaeve muttered.
She and Elaine had been coming to speak with Brigitta as often as they could, though too frequently it had not been possible with Tom and Julin sharing the camp and standing night guard. Brigitta actually remembered the War of Power, one lifetime of it anyway, and the Forsaken. Her past lives were like books fondly remembered from long ago, the more distant dimmer than the nearer, but the Forsaken stood out, especially Mogadine.
"You see, Nynaeve, the flow of time here can shift in larger ways, too. It might be months before I am born again, or days, here, for me. In the waking world, it could be years yet before my birth."
With an effort, Nynaeve suppressed her vexation. "Then we mustn't waste what time we have. Have you seen any of them since we last met?" There was no need to say who.
"Too many.
Lanfear is often in Tel Iron Riod, of course, but I have seen Ravine and Samael and Grendal, Demondred and Semirag."
Brigitta's voice tightened at the last name. Even Mogadine, who hated her, did not frighten her visibly, but Semirag was another matter. Nynaeve shivered as well. The golden-haired woman had told her too much of that one, and realized she was wearing a thick wool cloak with a deep hood pulled up to hide her face. Flushing, she made it disappear.
"None of them have seen you?" she asked anxiously.
Brigitta was more vulnerable than herself in many ways, despite her knowledge of Tel Iron Riod. She had never been able to channel. Any of the Forsaken could destroy her as if crushing an ant without breaking stride. And if she were destroyed here, there would be no rebirth for her ever again.
"I'm not so unskilled or so foolish as to allow that."
Brigitta leaned on her silver bow. Legend said she never missed with that bow and her silver arrows. "They are concerned with each other, not anyone else. I have seen Ravine and Samael, Grendal and Lanfear, each stalking the others unseen, and Demondred and Semirag each shadowing them as well. I've not seen so much of them here since they were freed."
"They are up to something," Nynaeve bit her lip in vexed frustration. "But what?"
"I cannot say yet, Nynaeve.
In the War of the Shadow, they were always plotting against each other as often as not, but their work has never boded well for the world, waking or dreaming.
Try to find out, Brigitta, as much as you can safely at any rate. Do not take any risks.
The other woman's face did not change, but Nynaeve thought she was amused. The fool woman thought as little of danger as did Lan. She wished she could ask about the White Tower, about what Swan might be scheming, but Brigitta could neither see nor touch the waking world unless she was called there by the horn.
You are just trying to avoid what you really want to ask.
Have you seen Mogadin?
No, Brigitta sighed, but not for lack of trying.
In the usual course I can find anyone who knows they are in the world of dreams. There is a feel, like ripples spreading through the air from them, or perhaps from their awareness. I do not know, really. I am a soldier, not a scholar. Either she has not come in to tell Iron Riod since you defeated her, or...
She hesitated, and Nynaeve wanted to stop her from saying what she knew would come next, but Brigitta was too strong to dodge unpalatable possibilities.
Or else she knows I have been looking for her. She can hide, that one. She is not called the Spider for nothing.
That was what a Mogadin had been in the Age of Legends, a tiny spider that spun its webs in secret places, its bite poison enough to kill in heartbeats.
Suddenly very much aware of feeling unseen eyes, Nynaeve shivered heavily. It was not trembling, just a shiver, not trembling. Still, she kept the sleek Tara Bonner gown firmly in mind, lest she abruptly find herself wearing armor. It was embarrassing enough if that sort of thing happened when she was alone, even more under the cool blue gaze of a woman valiant enough to be a match for Gaedal Kane.
Can you find her even when she wants to remain hidden, Brigitta?
It was a very great deal to ask, if Mogadin knew she was being hunted, like searching for a lion in high grass armed only with a stick. The other woman did not hesitate.
Perhaps. I will try.
Hefting her bow, she added, I must go now. I do not want to risk being seen by the others when they come.
Nynaeve put a hand on her arm to stop her.
It would be a help if you let me tell them. That way I could share what you've told me about the Forsaken with Egwene and the Wise Ones, and they could tell Rand.
Brigitta, he needs to know.
You promised, Nynaeve. Those bright blue eyes were unyielding as ice. The prescripts say that we must not let anyone know that we reside in Tel Iron Riod. I have broken many by speaking to you, much more by giving aid, because I cannot stand by and watch you battle the Shadow. I have fought that battle in more lifetimes than I can remember, but I will keep as many of the prescripts as I can. You must hold to your promise.
Of course I will, she said indignantly, unless you release me from it. And I do ask you to...
No.
And Brigitta was gone.
One moment Nynaeve's hand rested on a white coat sleeve, the next on empty air. In her mind she ran through a few curses she had overheard from Tom and Julin, the sort she would have scolded Elaine for listening to, much less using. There was no point calling Brigitta's name again. She probably would not come. Nynaeve only hoped she responded the next time she or Elaine called.
Brigitta! I will keep my promise, Brigitta!
She would have heard that.
Perhaps by their next meeting she would know something of Mogadin's activities.
Nynaeve almost hoped she would not. If she did, it meant that Mogadin really was stalking Tel Iron Riod.
Fool woman! If you don't look for snakes, you cannot complain when one bites you.
She really did want to meet Elaine's Leany one day. The emptiness of the vast chamber oppressed her, all those great polished columns and that sense of being watched from the dimness between. If there really was anybody there, Brigitta would have known. She realized that she was smoothing the silk gown over her hips, and to take her mind off eyes that were not there, she concentrated on the dress. It had been in good Two Rivers woolens that Lan had first seen her, and a simple embroidered dress that she'd been wearing when he professed his love. But she wanted him to see her in gowns like this. It would not be indecent if he was the one seeing her. A tall standing mirror appeared, casting her reflection as she turned this way and that, even peering back over her shoulder. The yellow folds sheathed her closely, suggesting everything they hid. The women's circle in Emmons Field would have hauled her off for a good talking to in private, wisdom or no wisdom. Yet it was quite beautiful. Here, alone, she could admit that she had a bit more than gotten used to wearing something like this in public. "You enjoyed it," she scolded herself. "You are every bit as much a hussy as Elaine seems to be turning into." But it was beautiful, and maybe not as immodest as she had always said. Not a neckline cut halfway to her knees like the first of Mayenne, for instance. Well, perhaps Bear Elaine's were not that low, but they were still far deeper than respectability required. She had heard about what Domani women often wore. Even Tara Bonner's called those indecent. With the thought, the yellow silk folds became rippling flows, with a narrow belt of woven gold. And thin. Her face colored. Very thin. Barely opaque at all, in fact. The gowns certainly did more than suggest. If Lan saw her in that, he would not gabble that his love for her was hopeless and that he would not give her widow's weeds for a bridal gift. One glimpse and his blood would catch fire. He would... "What under the light is that you have on, Nynaeve?" Egwene asked in scandalized tones. Nynaeve leaped straight up, spinning, and when she came down facing Egwene and Milane, it would be Milane, though none of the wise ones would have been any better. The mirror was gone, and she was wearing a dark woolen Two Rivers dress thick enough for the depths of winter. Mortified at being startled as much as anything else, it was mainly at being startled. She changed the dress instantly, without thinking, flashing back into the gossamer Domani, and just as quickly to the yellow Tara Bonner folds. Her face flamed. They probably thought her a complete fool, and in front of Milane at that. The wise one was beautiful, with her long red-gold hair and clear green eyes. Not that she cared a whit how the woman looked. But Milane had been at her last meeting here with Egwene, too, and taunted her about Lan. Nynaeve had lost her temper over it. Egwene claimed they were not taunts, not among Aiel women, but Milane had complimented Lan's shoulders, and his hands, and his eyes. What right did that green-eyed cat have to look at Lan's shoulders? Not that she had any doubts of his faithfulness, but he was a man, and far away from her, and Milane was right there, and... Firmly she put a stop to that line of reasoning. "Is Lan..." She thought her face was going to burn off. "Can't you control your own tongue, woman?" But she would not, could not, back away. Not with Milane there. Egwene's bemused smile was bad enough, but Milane dared to put on a look of understanding. "Is he well?" She tried for cool composure, but it came out strained. "He is well," Egwene said. "He worries about whether you are safe." Nynaeve let out a breath she had not realized she was holding. The waste was a dangerous place even without the likes of Cooladine and the Shido, and the man did not know the meaning of caution. He was worried about her safety? Did the fool man think she could not take care of herself? "We finally reached Amadicia," she said quickly, hoping to cover herself. A flapping tongue and then sighs. The man has stolen my wits. There was no telling from the others' faces whether she was succeeding. "A village called Sienda, east of Amador. White cloaks everywhere, but they don't look at us twice. It is others we have to worry about." In front of Milane, she had to be careful, to bend the truth a little, in fact, here and there. But she told them of Rhonda Macura and her odd message, and her trying to drug them. Trying, because she could not make herself admit in front of Milane that the woman had succeeded. "Light, what am I doing? I've never lied to Egwene before in my life." The supposed reason, the return of a runaway accepted, certainly could not be mentioned, not in front of one of the wise ones. They thought that she and Elaine were full Aes Sedai, but she had to let Egwene know the truth of that somehow.
It might have to do with some plot concerning Andor, but Elaine and you and I have things in common, Egwene, and I think we should be just as careful as Elaine.
The girl nodded slowly. She looked stunned, as well she might, but she seemed to understand.
A good thing the taste of that tea made me suspicious. Imagine trying to feed fork root to someone who knows herbs as well as I do.
Schemes within schemes, Milane murmured.
The Great Serpent is a good sign for you, Aes Sedai, I think. Some day you may swallow yourselves by accident.
We have news ourselves, Egwene said.
Nynaeve could see no reason for the girl's haste. I'm certainly not going to let the woman bait me into losing my temper, and I certainly wouldn't get angry over her insulting the tower.
She took her hand away from her braid.
What Egwene had to say put temper right out of her head.
Cooladine crossing the spine of the world was surely grave, and Rand following scarcely less so. He was pushing hard for the Jangai Pass, marching from first light until after dusk, and Milane said they would soon reach it. Conditions in Cairhien were harsh enough without a war between Aiel on its territory, and a new Aiel war to come, surely, if he tried to carry out his mad plan. Mad. Not yet, surely. He had to hang on to sanity somehow. How long since I was worrying how to protect him, she thought bitterly. And now I just want him to stay sane to fight the last battle. Not only for that reason, but for that one, too. He was what he was. The light burn me. I'm as bad as Swan Sanche or any of them. It was what Egwene had to say about Moiraine that shocked her.
She obeys him? She said incredulously.
Egwene gave a vigorous nod in that ridiculous Aiel scarf.
Last night they had an argument. She's still trying to convince him not to cross the dragon wall, and finally he told her to stand outside until she cooled down. She looked about to swallow her tongue, but she did it. She stayed out in the night for an hour anyway.
It is not proper, Milane said, resettling her shawl firmly. Men have no more business ordering Aes Sedai about than they do wise ones, even the Kara Karn.
They certainly do not, Nynaeve agreed, then had to clamp her mouth shut to keep from gaping at herself.
What do I care if he makes her dance to his tune? She has made all of us dance to hers often enough. But it was not proper. I do not want to be Aes Sedai just to learn more about healing. I want to stay who I am. Let him order her about. Still, it was not proper.
At least he talks with her now, Egwene said. Before he turned to acid if she came within 10 feet of him.
Nynaeve, his head swells bigger every day.
Back when I thought you'd follow me as wisdom, Nynaeve told her wryly, I taught you how to take swelling down. Best for him if you do it, even if he has turned into the king bull in the pasture. Maybe most because he is. It seems to me that kings and queens can be fools when they forget what they are and act like who they are, but they're worse when they only remember what they are and forget who. Most could do with someone whose only job is to remind them that they eat and sweat and cry the same as any farmer.
Milane folded her shawl around her, seeming unsure whether to agree or not, but Egwene said,
I try, but sometimes he doesn't seem like himself at all, and even when he is, his arrogance is usually too thick a bubble to prick.
Do the best you can. Helping him hold on to himself may be the best thing that anyone could do, for him and the rest of the world.
That produced a silence.
She and Egwene certainly did not like to talk about the eventuality of Rand going mad, and Milane could not like it any better.
I have something else important to tell you, she went on after a moment. I think the Forsaken are planning something.
It was not the same as telling them about Brigitta. She made it seem that she herself had seen Lanfear and the others. In truth, Mogadine was the only one she could recognize at sight, and maybe Asmodeon, though she had only seen him once, and at a distance. She hoped neither of them thought to ask how she knew who was who, or why she thought Mogadine might be skulking about. In actuality, the problem did not arise from that at all.
"Have you been wandering the world of dreams?"
Milane's eyes were green ice. Nynaeve met her level stare for level stare, despite Egwene's rueful head-shaking. I could hardly see Ravine and the rest without it, now could I?
Aes Sedai, you know little and you try too much. You should not have been taught the few pieces that you have. For myself, I sometimes regret that we agreed even to these meetings. Unschooled women should not be allowed in Tel Iron Riod.
I have schooled myself in more than you ever taught me. Nynaeve kept her voice cool with an effort. I learned to channel on my own, and I do not see why Tel Iron Riod should be any different. It was only stubborn anger that made her say that. She had taught herself to channel, true, but without knowing what it was that she was doing and only after a fashion. Before the White Tower she had healed sometimes, but unaware, until Moiraine proved it to her. Her teachers in the tower had said that was why she needed to be angry in order to channel. She had hidden her ability from herself, afraid of it, and only fury could break through that long-buried fear.
"So, you are one of those the Aes Sedai call wilders."
There was a hint of something in the last word, but whether scorn or pity, Nynaeve did not like it. The term was seldom complimentary in the tower. Of course, there were no wilders among the Aiel. The wise ones who could channel found every last girl with the spark born in her, those who would develop the ability to channel sooner or later, even if they did not try to learn. They claimed also to find every girl without the spark who could learn if instructed. No Aiel girl died trying to learn by herself.
"You know the dangers of learning the power without guidance, Aes Sedai. Do not think the dangers of the dream are less. They are just as great, perhaps more for those who venture without knowledge."
"I am careful," Nynaeve said in a tight voice. She had not come to be lectured by this sun-haired vixen of an Aiel.
"I know what I am doing, Milane."
"You know nothing.
You are as headstrong as this one was when she came to us."
The wise one gave Egwene a smile that actually seemed affectionate. "We tamed her excessive exuberance, and now she learns swiftly, though she does have many faults still." Egwene's pleased grin faded. Nynaeve suspected that grin was why Milane had added the last. "If you wish to wander the dream," the Aiel woman went on, "come to us. We will tame your zeal as well, and teach you."
"I do not need taming, thank you very much," Nynaeve said with a polite smile.
"Ah, Nalain will die on the day he learns that you are dead."
Ice stabbed into Nynaeve's heart. Ah, Nalain was what the Aiel called Lan. One man, it meant in the old tongue, or man alone, or the man who is an entire people. Exact translations from the old tongue were often difficult. The Aiel had a great deal of respect for Lan, the man who would not give up his war with the Shadow, the enemy that had destroyed his nation.
"You are a dirty fighter," she muttered.
Milane quirked an eyebrow.
"Do we fight? If we do, then know that in battle there is only winning and losing. Rules against hurting are for games. I want your promise that you will do nothing in the dream without first asking one of us. I know Aes Sedai cannot lie, so I would hear you say it."
Nynaeve gritted her teeth. The words would be easy to say. She did not have to hold to them. She was not bound by the three oaths. But it would be admitting that Milane was right. She did not believe it, and she would not say it.
"She'll not promise, Milane," Egwene said finally. "When she gets that muley look, she wouldn't come out of the house if you showed her the roof on fire."
Nynaeve spared a piece of glare for her. Muley indeed, when all she did was refuse to be pushed about like a rag doll. After a long moment, Milane sighed. "Very well. But it would be well to remember, Aes Sedai, that you are but a child in Tel Iron Riod. Come, Egwene, we must go." An amused wince crossed Egwene's face as the two faded away. Abruptly, Nynaeve realized that her clothes had changed, had been changed.
The wise ones knew enough of Tel-Irun-Riad to alter things about others as well as themselves. She wore a white blouse and a dark skirt, but unlike those of the women who had just gone, this stopped well short of her knees. Her shoes and stockings were gone, and her hair was divided into two braids, one over each ear, woven with yellow ribbons. A rag doll with a carved and painted face sat beside her bare feet. She could hear her teeth grinding. This had happened once before, and she had pried out of Egwene that this was how the Aiel dressed little girls. In a fury, she switched back to the yellow Tarabonner silk. This time it adhered even more closely, and kicked the doll. It sailed away, vanishing in midair. That Mullane probably had her eye on Lan. The Aiel all seemed to think he was some sort of hero. The high neck became a tall lace collar, and the deep, narrow neckline showed her cleavage. If that woman so much as smiled at him, if he... Suddenly she became aware of her fast-sinking, rapidly widening neckline, and hastily brought it back up, not all the way, but enough that she did not have to blush. The dress had grown so tight that she could not move. She took care of that, too. So she was supposed to ask permission, was she? Go begging the wise ones before doing anything? Had she not defeated Mogadine? They had been properly impressed at the time, but they seemed to have forgotten. If she could not use Birgitta to find out what was going on in the tower, perhaps there was a way she could do it herself.